Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and we're here to empower people, providing you with the insights and knowledge about health and aging, disease and prevention, but also looking at our environment. Yesterday, we did a whole program on 5G, the story they're not telling you. We've posted that article along with 9 others. That's 10 articles that actually give you the actual peer-reviewed science about why we should oppose 5G. In time, it will be shown, probably over the next 2 to 3 to 4 years, that people are going to be having a whole new set of environmental illnesses due to their body being penetrated by these electromagnetic pulses. So let's pay attention, because not to do so means you're going to have exposure 24/7 every day of your life, and it will shorten your life. It can cause cancers. I'm not going to go through everything I went through yesterday. Just read the articles and pass them forward, please. Today, we're going to talk about a University of Basel, which is in Switzerland, study on magnesium. I'll tell you about that in a moment. But also, we got a very good response yesterday. People really liked the discussion on the fourth industrial revolution or the Great Reset. It's great for the corporations, it's great for governmental agencies, it's great for new agencies that would look more like they were a part of Orwell's 1984. We will own nothing, and they're serious about that. You won't own anything. You won't be able to have gold or silver. You won't be able to have jewelry. You'll own nothing except what they want you to have, and then you'll rent it. Then why would this be a good thing? Well, it's not. And yet they'll sell it through the media as if it's absolutely essential. And most people will probably say, I want that. You'll see. We're going to do a lot of programs on this and bring on experts. But we're going to part 2 of our program on the fourth industrial revolution, the Great Reset, what's wrong with it, on today's program. We have other clips also today that are important. Magnesium, as we know, is an essential macro, meaning larger, nutrient. It's a mineral, like calcium. What most people don't know is, aside from helping our heart, and there's over 100 different enzymatic systems that magnesium helps put into play when you have enough of it to protect your heart. It's great for people who have irregular heartbeats, because that, and along with other nutrients, L-carnitine, etc., you can frequently diminish or improve or eliminate AFib altogether. But what this University of Basel is telling us is that it's good for your immune system, including the fight against cancer. Now, previous studies have shown that cancerous growths spread faster in the bodies of mice when the animals receive a low magnesium diet. And the average American diet is low in magnesium and calcium, by the way, for that matter. And therefore, it lowers your defenses against the flu viruses. And so there's so far been little research on how exactly this mineral affects the immune system. Now, researchers have discovered that T cells, a very important part of your immune system, can eliminate abnormal or infected cells efficiently only in a magnesium-rich environment. Specifically, magnesium is important for the function of T-cell surface protein called LFA1. So just in lay language, make sure you're getting about 1,000 milligrams of magnesium. I would divide it in 2 doses, 1 in the morning, 1 in the evening, and it will help your heart. It'll help your immune system. That can help get you through the flu season without the flu. Just one of the things, along with vitamin D and vitamin C and zinc and quercetin. Now, someone called in the other day and asked about eyes and macular degeneration. So I have a whole protocol for that. But a new study from the University of Nebraska Medical Center shows that people who have more lycopene, and I mentioned to her lycopene, L-Y-C-O-P-E-N-E, and you find that in tomatoes, lots in tomatoes, especially tomato sauces, but also in all your red fruits and vegetables, raspberries, for example, strawberries. It's linked to living longer with metabolic disorders, or what's called metabolic syndrome, which is heart disease, diabetes, obesity. So let's just start getting more lycopene-rich foods into our diet. And one way to do that is every day to have a glass of fresh-made juice. Now, what you can do, you can take, for example, this time of year, pink oranges. That's a good source. Also, I would throw in raspberries and strawberries. Yeah. In the summertime, watermelon, one of your best sources. By the way, watermelon is just not only delicious when it's cold and it's, you know, firm, but juicy. And I like to pour some lemon juice on it. And rather than salt. Where I came from in West Virginia, people eat watermelon with salt. All right. So no salt, but the lemon juice gives you that. Lime juice do the same. In any case, we need the lycopene to live a longer life and to protect our eyes. Why? Because high blood levels of lycopene can reduce the risk of death in people with metabolic syndrome. That's what this study shows. Lycopene is an antioxidant. So pink, you got it. Vegetables, you can get it there. Even juicing red peppers is good too. Remember, lycopene is used in nature as a protection for the plant itself. The brighter, the more bold the colors, the richer the antioxidant composition, better it is for you. So if you're pre-diabetic or diabetic or overweight, get your lycopene. I have been trying to present as much information in my career on the dangers of sugar as possible. The trouble is, the science has been captured by the special industries. And then they try to say, well, it's not sugar, it's fat that causes the problems. No, the sugar industry is behind this. So much so that when I was invited down on a Thursday, an off day in PBS fundraising, and I did a program about the American diet. It was not, it was about power foods and which foods are good and which are not. And I showed the exact amount of sugar that the average American consumes in a given day. Now, there is no such thing as average. For virtually my entire career, I've been educating people about the dangers of sugar. We are sugar obsessed. And they are powerful, the sugar industry and their lobbying group. So just understand, sugar in any amount, processed sugar, fructose, is bad. Now, if you eat an apple or an orange, you're getting fructose, but that's natural fructose, and it's not in high amounts, and the enzymes and the other antioxidants and the phytonutrients allow it to be properly absorbed. No problem there. But when you take a tablespoon of sugar, and we're taking a lot of tablespoons of sugar every day, it's bad for you. This came from the European Journal of Neuroscience. A new study in rats provides significant insights into the long-term impacts of overconsumption of sugary foods during an adolescence. The study shows that the enjoyment of such foods later in adulthood is reduced in those who overconsumed early in life. Investigators found that this decrease in reward relates to reduced activity in one of the key hubs of the brain's reward circuitry, called the nucleus accumbens. So this long-lasting alteration could have important implications for reward-related disorders as substance abuse or eating disorders. So the more sugar you eat, you're in effect rewiring the brain as if the sugar is your cocaine, your heroin, your methamphetamine. Yeah, that's what's going on. That's why we crave sugar. Also from the Joseph Carreras Leukemia Research Institute in Germany, they finally have unveiled the epigenetic mechanisms by which vitamin D modulates the tolerance of the immune system. Again, it's a complex article, but today we have a lot of autoimmunity. We have tons of autoimmunity. 100 plus million Americans alone have autoimmune conditions. Therefore, the physician should think carefully before giving someone who already has an overstimulated immune system something that will cause the manufacturing in your cells of up to 40 trillion, I repeat, 40 trillion of the spike proteins that then cause the body to have to go after those spike proteins and cause even higher levels of stress upon the immune system, leading to a massive pandemic, a legitimate pandemic of what we are now seeing, autoimmune reactions. Anyhow, they finally figured this out, and vitamin D is such an important part of our defense system and how it does not attack its own body, how it tolerates itself and works properly. And they did multiple sclerosis, which affects one in every 1,000 people in Spain. It's a very serious autoimmune disease in which the immune system attacks the myelin sheath of some types of neurons, causing progressive neurological disability. And they found out how vitamin D helps with that and how keeping yourself with a strong immune system, in effect, is helping prevent all these conditions from worsening or even starting. Also, from the University of Toronto comes a study linking poor sleep, if you're older, over the 50, to more severe arterial sclerosis. That's not good. That's why a lot of older people who have sleep problems die from arteriosclerotic-related heart disease. By the way, poor sleep quality in older people will end up giving you more severe arteriosclerosis in the brain, as well as a greater burden of oxygen-starved tissue, what we call infarcts in the brain, both of which can contribute to the risk of a stroke and cognitive impairment. That's according to new findings just reported in the American Heart Association journal Stroke. So, getting a good night's sleep, melatonin can help. Theanine can help, 200 milligrams, so that's very good. And turning off all electronic devices, not having a telephone or computer on near your head, wearing earplugs if you've got sound outside, wearing just a little eye mask if you have light coming in the room, all that is capable. And not having anything in your body to eat for at least 3 hours before going to bed. Also, magnesium helps you get a better night's sleep as well. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to play part two of the new reset. And it's being promoted by a group of dilettantes, in my opinion, sociopaths, because they care not for the consequences to everyone else. But boy, you should care about what's coming because you will be affected. You can hide. You don't have to protest anything in life. You don't have to be concerned about starving children in Libya due to the United States, due to our president and vice president, all the other dancing clowns in the State Department, the Defense Department. You don't have to care about anything or anybody. But they're coming after you, and they're going to get you. And you'll have no choice. That's how bad it is. That's why I said, as bad as COVID is, it is nothing compared to the Great Reset and the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Now we're going to take it piece by piece and deconstruct it so you can see why you should be concerned. Oh, also, we're going to show you over the next several days a trailer and people's comments, spontaneous comments. You'll see that on why we should have been paying attention to safety and efficacy issue in vaccines long before COVID. But we didn't. No one did. Everybody, scientists, medical doctors, pediatricians, the public, everybody lined up to get their vaccines. But nobody wants to open that door. We're opening that door. This coming Monday, my entire program is devoted to that. You're going to see stuff you have never seen. And now you'll have a better understanding of why we should be questioning everything that any governmental agency or so-called experts or the media tells us is right for us. It's not right for us. It's never been right for us, but it sure is right for them. Plus, you can go to PRN in our archives, and you'll see the director's cut and all these outtakes when I'm in the theater and talking with the audience and the different experts that I'm filming and stuff I could not put in the film. Mind you, I might film for 300 hours to make 1 hour, hour and a half film. But we had a lot of great stuff we left out. Now you have a chance to see it all. All right? And if this works, if you like this, if you feel this is important to you, on a monthly basis, I'll be doing this with another topic every month. Back in a moment. Please stay with me.
Now imagine a scenario in which you do something that the government does not approve of. You read a book that it doesn't want you to read. You write an essay or an article that it doesn't like. You create a YouTube video commenting on something in a negative way. Now, those are all things that productive human beings do to critique and build and grow their society. But you can't do it there. And if you do something that the government disapproves of, using these social credit scores, they can ghost you. They can effectively lock you out of your world. And it works because you don't own anything. It is that ownership, that broad-based private ownership, that keeps people free from government tyranny. Maggie Thatcher from the UK very famously embarked on a project to expand human liberty in her nation by trying to ensure as much broad-based private and individual ownership of property as possible. In that, she was in agreement with George Washington, who said that it is property rights that prop up human freedom. You can go into great depth and philosophy on this one. You can even take property rights down to the level of your thoughts. Are you free to own them? Are you free to express them? Or is the realm of thinking controlled by a collective? Now, of course, all that sounds, it sounds like terrible fear-mongering. But of course, the question for anyone who looks back over history is to ask, could it happen here? Could it happen again? And I think if you do know your history, the answer is it happens surprisingly easily and it happens surprisingly often. When communities play with this idea of collectivist ownership, I would argue that it happens 100% of the time. And that when we're talking about collective ownership and the elevating of the group over the sanctity of the individual, we are dealing with a formula that has been deeply damaging to the human species.
So Douglas, what about the threats to the property that we already own? Is there a risk there that we might lose our ownership over our existing property?
David, that's an excellent question, and it's one that I think people are not considering. Now, think again of those words. You will own nothing, and you will be happy. It doesn't allow for a you will continue to own what your family has bequeathed down the generations. The simple statement, if we are to take them at their word, is you will own nothing, and you will be happy. Now, that poses some fascinating problems in terms of what communities already own. We largely around the world, we own our homes. We bequeath heirlooms, family heirlooms to the next generation. You might own a wedding ring. You might own things that you want to give on to your children. And I would argue that that is one of the very best things that we do. Each generation tries to uplift the next generation. This philosophy seems to be saying, instead of doing that, we reset each generation at zero and leave you dependent on a government welfare system. Now, from the most basic human perspective, that strikes me as deeply unhealthy. If the best thing we do is to raise up our children and help them to go further than us, then starting at zero with government dependency every generation, it strikes me as a bit of a chilling idea. If you look at basic stats, human stats, around groups of people living on welfare, you will find that you have disproportionate rates of marital breakup, of family breakup, of alcohol and drug abuse, and of interpersonal violence. The stats are way different to people who are self-sufficient, self-sustaining, employed, or running their own businesses. So one of the things that I think people are not considering here is under a paradigm in which nobody owns anything, we all become a group of people living under the welfare state. And it seems to me that that is a very good way to do damage to the health and to the psyche of human beings. We don't seem to prosper under such conditions. I concede very readily that we have to help the poor and the struggling among us. I mean, that is a Christian, a Judeo-Christian principle. It has been built into Western classical thinking for a very long time. But a welfare state in which you don't do anything, but you live dependent on the government, seems to cause human beings to rot. I don't think it's a healthy scenario. We're proposing it on a global scale.
Well, thanks very much, Douglas. I think it's important that we interrogate the dominant narratives that are emerging from global institutions like the World Economic Forum, and to ask ourselves, who are these narratives serving exactly?
Of what has been in motion, it is not just now starting, but with every catastrophe, irrespective of who ultimately causes the catastrophe, and I do not support those who say, well, the pandemic was created by four. Population, reduction. I haven't seen the evidence. Have I seen the evidence of those individuals like Bill Gates exploiting the pandemic for their economic advantage and all the people at Davos? Just take a look at the results. The 10 wealthiest people in the world had their personal wealth double in the last 2 years. That's never happened in world history. So they're exploiting this at every level. In fact, everyone who can exploit it is doing so. And now the next exploitation is that there are several thousand people, probably in the neighborhood around 10,000 people, who are sponsoring the idea of the Great Reset. Trudeau in Canada and Prince Charles in England and the president here, everyone who's a power player around the world is saying, yes, we want the Great Reset. It's a great opportunity. Great opportunity to take away all possessions and put them in the control of a corporate state run group. That is not a good idea by any measure. Now let's just go to what's going on in Europe, because we're in touch with all the different demonstrations and protests in Europe, and they're massive and they're growing, and they're confronting the governments around the country. Millions have gone to protest in Germany and in France, for example, and tiny little protests by comparison in the United States. There's one coming up that I think will be the biggest one thus far. All the keynote people who are speaking, all have appeared on this program, and they all had impeccable, orthodox, non-controversial, substantive resumes. Every one of them now has been targeted. Gaslight and to be canceled. Many have lost their tenure positions, lost their incomes. So they paid a price, but they're not backing down. They're going out there. But here's I got this today. It was on Tucker Carlson last night when he was interviewing a person, and he made a germane, I can disagree with him on a lot of topics, as can you, but he's nailing it on some of these, and he's got the largest audience out there. Next to Joe Rogan, he's the largest audience out there. And it's a mix of all kinds. But he interviewed a woman who's one of the leading spokespersons, I believe she's a lawyer, in Europe. And she is organizing a lot of the events. And he's saying, do you see any of this in the American media? And the answer is, none of this is covered in the American media. None of it at all. Why not? Isn't it newsworthy when you have millions upon millions of people all over the world protesting mandatory vaccines? Yes, it is newsworthy, but you can't have that picture shown, because then it might give Americans ideas that they could protest also. So let's hear what she has to say about what's going on in Europe and why this fits exactly into what you just heard about you will own nothing. And they're serious about this. And they're breaking it into tranches. For example, one tranche now is, we're going to get rid of cash, all gold, all silver. Those would be worthless. You would have to turn those in to get credit into an account, excuse me, that the government will control. Remember, if you have no currency and only a card, a chip that allows you to buy things, what happens when you no longer have the governments or the corporations handling this, you no longer have the credit score you deserve? or need that they believe, and hence, like China, they can cut you off from having any money. You can't travel, you'll be persona non grata, and you'll then be attacked by whatever justice system is in place to do that. Just another, what we don't need, another monolithic agency, bureaucracy. And remember, this is happening now. This is not speculation, just like transhumanism is here now. And automation is here now. So a lot of people thinking this doesn't, you know, bother them. You're wrong. Everyone, if you're a medical doctor, and let's say you're a diagnostician, they now have artificial intelligence that can do better diagnosis than any human. You're a lawyer. You talk about a profession being absolutely wiped clean. It's legal profession. Now, some of you can say, well, maybe that's just good karma. Partly that would be correct. Not all lawyers are scumbag, lying, you know, thieves. Well, I'm being optimistic. My experience has not been good, even though my own lawyers, I fired 9. In any case, but artificial intelligence has all the legal history in the world. Now, there's no human being that could tell you what the likely outcome of a lawsuit would be or how to fight a lawsuit in 60 seconds or less. Artificial intelligence can do it instantly, and you could have a team of 100 lawyers take a month to do the same thing. So needless to say, only the major law firms who have specific contracts with government or corporations, but probably 80% of all lawyers will lose their job over the next 3 years. By 5 years, it'll be a desert. But that's true of a lot of things that people highly skilled have taken for granted. And those who work on factory floors, automation is going to take those jobs. So just be aware. And then they're coming for relationships. There's a whole, and I'll be doing a show on this, there's a whole group of new transhuman. They're transhuman because they actually have DNA in them. They can think, they can communicate, they can answer questions that are not programmed. You're dealing with something that cannot be controlled, but it's supposed to be the perfect relationship, the perfect partner, whatever that need you have, you can find that. But they can't control that, but it's coming. What's that going to do to traditional relationships? What's that going to do for people who already have a relationship, and that could challenge it? I mean, you have no idea the complications that are facing us on every level, but it's happening now. This is not the future. Now let's hear from her.
Dutch legal philosopher. She joins us tonight from overseas. Eva, thanks so much for coming on. So you're getting the sense in the United States that everyone's in favor of vax mandates, and then you see coverage like that and you realize there's a global movement against it. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. There is a massive movement going on in Europe right now of tons of people, hundreds of thousands, millions of people, actually, who are very much aware of what's at stake here. These people are aware of the fact that our constitutional rights are being set aside without an end date, and that we're heading towards a new system, a tyrannical regime of mass surveillance and control. And this is not just a hunch. This is all part of a bigger plan. This is something people who are watching right now can actually go and look up. What's very important for the American audience to know is that we've had this digital COVID pass in place in Europe, which is basically like a QR code on your phone that grants you access to everyday life, like to bars, restaurants, etc. It's completely bound to your vax status. And this is all part of a European project issued by the European Commission that is basically surrounded around this idea of a European digital identity. So this will not stay just linked to your vaccination status. This will encompass taxes. This will encompass your medical records apart from your vaccination status, your bank information. So basically, we already have a system in place right now that is very close, or at least reminds us of the beginning phases of a social credit system. We are literally turning into China.
If this were linked to digital currency and presumably paper currencies on the way out, then the average person would be utterly controlled by the government. I mean, the government could just turn off your ability to buy anything, your ability to go anywhere. I mean, at that point, you really are a slave to a supposedly democratic government, are you not?
That's exactly right. That's exactly what they're planning to do. And this agenda is supposed to be laid out by 2030. So that's what we're heading towards. So you see all these people going out in the streets. It's because they know that this is what's going on. And I think that it's all going to be dependent on whether they'll be able to roll this agenda out, whether Austria is going to enforce compulsory mandatory vaccinations on a nationwide level. So the parliament in Austria, another country in Europe, is debating about this, or voting on this, I should say, on Thursday, which will mean that in Austria from February onwards, vaccination for COVID will be mandatory for every citizen over the age of 18. If you don't get vaccinated, you will be having to pay massive fines up to 15,000 euros a year, which, you know, basically your existence as an unvaccinated person will become illegal. So everybody will have this digital COVID pass. And I gotta say, Tucker, it would not be the first time in European history that tyranny is born in Austria. So what will happen on Thursday in Austria is going to be a landmark case that will determine basically whether Europe is going to be part of the free West for much longer. And, well, it looks like this law will pass. So it looks like we're basically headed towards an end station that literally is tyranny. And it's absolutely crucial that we fight this now, that we put pressure on our governments, and that we walk together for this fight of our freedom, of our future. Because I have to say, you in America, you might be next.
I don't think there's any question. And unfortunately, our main weakness...
Yes, we are not just next. We are right in line. By the way, the only good news yesterday, it was good news, is Boris Johnson got up before Parliament and said that they're returning to normal. They're not requiring masks or vaccinations or people to stay quarantined. So they've accepted the fact that after five waves and quarantining people, home isolation, et cetera, and all the vaccines, including the boosters, everything is increasing, not decreasing. The simple reality is sooner or later, we will all be exposed to COVID. And in the process of doing that, there are generally two rules. One is if you're young or even older and healthier, you don't have comorbidities, you're not obese, you don't have heart disease, emphysema, cancer, or autoimmune conditions, you should be able to come out of it relatively quickly and with few major symptoms. That's what the actual science and clinical experience is showing. But then if you are older or sick or younger and sick, then you really should be working diligently to get yourself into shape, especially your immune system. To that end, I'll be doing a special program next week for an hour on building the immune system up. Also, my hope is that people will be reaching out now for physicians who are willing to work with them if they get sick, so that the medications, there are about 26 different FDA-approved off-label medications that would include monoclonal antibodies and different steroids, different antibiotics, like azithromycin, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine. And so therefore, you would have from the first day of those symptoms, you would have a guided medical clinical input that would help you. Now, if you're motivated, you'll do it. If you're one of my friends, then that's the last thing you'll do, is actually be prepared for anything, because none of them have been. Because they call me after panic, after they've gotten sick. You should also have at home right now olive leaf extract, 1,000 milligrams, quercetin, vitamin C, zinc, magnesium, and N-acetylcysteine. And these are all, vitamin D3 and vitamin A. That's what your preventative kit should be. because all of those have strong peer-reviewed literature. I mean, we're talking hundreds of studies that show that they can help you with any virus, all viruses, and bacteria, and keep your immune system strong. And then a healthy plant-based diet. Now, I've already posted all this. Excuse me. This is all up on the website, GaryNoll.com. So it's a two-step program. And that's why you should reach out, doctors, frontline doctors, and so you can be in a system that can help you when you get sick, preventatively, and also to be there when you hit the virus. But once you have it, over 150 studies show that you have a super immunity. And that's acknowledged all over the world, except by Anthony Fauci and the dancing clowns who control the narrative. But their narrative is cracking. It's shattering. Everywhere we're learning. For example, someone was on CNN just the other day. They sent me a clip where this is a professor in the field and saying that all these cloth masks, they don't work at all. That is correct. And only an N95 works, which it does. But then as it works to a degree, which is good, it also decreases oxygen that your brain needs at about 21%, and it takes it down to around 17%. In fact, the better protection a mask is against a virus, any virus, the less oxygen you're going to be able to breathe, and the more carbon dioxide will be building up. And as we have played on this program, and you can go back through the archives and watch them, two separate studies where young people, teenagers, wearing all different forms of masks, and they tried it with every type of mask, within 13 to 15 seconds, that's how quick you go into an oxygen deprivation or a carbon dioxide overload. Now, that's 15 seconds. Now, imagine wearing that same mask all day long. And then ask yourself, what carnage have we visited upon an entire generation of young people who are going to suffer from neurological problems for the rest of their life? And that's why I believe that we should have all these court cases sue these people who are responsible for this, because it's all about politics and profit. It has nothing now to do with public health. And they've lied about everything, and that's just a fact. But who are these people? Who are these people? We know their names, most of them. But I don't know if you've ever read this. I hadn't before. I don't know who they are. White Hot Harlots. That's the byline. But here's what they had to say. I'm going to quote them verbatim because I thought this was interesting. Sorry, I can't use their language. It would be a little offensive. But here's what they say. Quote, "The highly skilled are the enemies of your existence." This line of BS would be less infuriating if this country wasn't being run by credentialized, highly skilled dimwits who are objectively horrible at their jobs. Our highly skilled leaders have not figured out how to manufacture paper masks 2 years after the end of the pandemic. They just let a miles-long stretch of highway sit dormant for 20 hours in freezing cold temperatures. They can't fathom economic growth that doesn't involve strip mining existing productive industries and buying into blatantly false technological promises made by flagrantly moronic charlatans. They can't win a war in spite of having the largest, most wasteful military in human history. They can't provide adequate health care in spite of spending more than any other nation on earth. By the way, it'll be almost $4 trillion this year. These people despise intelligence and regard integrity as naivety. They revere only savvy and ruthlessness in people. They are incapable of neither empathy nor self-reflection. They believe their ability to nod blankly at charts. They do not comprehend and defer all their decisions to self-serving corporate bodies is a mystical skill possessed only by a chosen few, and that these few are the rightful leaders of all organizations, public and private. They are morons. It's incredibly difficult, borderline impossible, to become a highly skilled American unless you yourself are a moron, or you at least are willing to pretend to be a moron and never question the authority of the morons around you. I'd love to see these, I can't use the word, try to fix a car, rewire a house, or survive an 8-hour shift at Dunkin' Donuts. I'd love to see them try to spend 18 hours lost in the woods without getting mauled by a beaver or attempting to gnaw their own fingers off. In short, it'd be really effing nice if they were treated, if only for a short period of time, how they think the rest of us deserve to be treated. End quote. I don't know who you are out there, but everything you said is absolutely accurate. Everything is wrong in the world today. I mean, everything that we're ending up taking, eating, being educated through, everything, and especially everything in the body politic, is run by these morons. Highly educated and ruthless, sociopathic, and couldn't survive on their own for any amount of time. Yet they criticize, as Hillary Clinton, when was the last time the Clintons had to do anything for themselves? I don't even know if they wiped themselves. Maybe they have someone that they hired to do that. Everybody is a contemptible, deplorable. And now under this regime, if you don't get vaccinated, even though it may be against your own health to do it, you are a lowlife. You're a racist. Everything is racist today. You realize what happens when real racists, who should be challenged, then are no longer considered essential because so many other non-racists are called racist, because that's a cheap, moronic way to try to get out of any argument or being responsible for the things you've written, things you've said. So that's the world we live in. Good, someone called it out. Good for them. Now, for those of you who would like to watch this little clip, I want you to go to progressiveradionetwork.com, then scroll down to where you see autism, and then watch this. For the rest of you, you can hear it. But this was a old clip that we found, and what's important in it is I spent thousands, tens of thousands of hours in my research and clinical experience working with people who were vaccine damaged. Everybody, no matter what their station in life, believed in vaccines. And why? Because the pediatricians believed in vaccines. And why? Because the scientists believed in vaccines. And why? Because the FDA and the CDC and the U.S. Public Health Service, the National Institute of Health and Infectious Disease, all believed in vaccines. And why? Well, because the professors at the universities who were doing the research for the government believed in vaccines. And why? Well, because they were going to share in the patents and huge grants for life from Anthony Fauci. And why? Because they were working in partnership with pharmaceutical companies, and they're all ethical. They've never done anything in the history of Johnson & Johnson, Merck, Moderna, they're blemish-free. Their only interest is serving you and keeping you healthier. Yeah. Just the opposite. There's not one of them that has not committed multiple crimes against humanity, caused multiple deaths, thousands, tens of thousands of deaths. But hey, we're not supposed to look at any of that. We're not supposed to look at any of the biases and the conflicts of interest. Oh, and by the way, here's some conflict of interest. It just got exposed. All this now is being exposed. And this is a good one to know. And I'll just quote it. Quote, scientists who were instrumental to COVID-19's, quote, natural origins narrative received over $50 million from Anthony Fauci's National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease funding in 2020 and 21. Yeah, in 2 years, $50 million they received. And therefore, the four of them, four prominent scientists who played key roles in shaping the public narrative around the origins of COVID-19 received substantial increases in grant money from the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, headed by Anthony Fauci. In the subsequent 2 years, a review of funding data by the different groups. Three of these scientists, Christian Anderson, Robert Gary, and Michael Farzon, were advisors to a teleconference organized by Fauci held February 1st, 2020, in response to increasing public questions about the origin of the virus. The scientists were also instrumental in the publication of Proximal Origin, a highly influential paper that promoted a natural origins theory for SARS-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, and has been frequently cited by the government and the media. Emails released under Freedom of Information Act requests show that the scientists had told the senior members of the Fauci teleconference that they were 60 to 80% sure that COVID-19 had come out of a laboratory. Notably, despite their private concerns about the origins of the virus, the first draft of the Proximal Origin was completed on the same day as a teleconference. Anderson and Gary were co-authors of Proximal Origin, and Farzon was acknowledged in the Nature version of Proximal Origin for his participatory discussions in the article's creation. Additionally, Anthony Fauci provided a substantial increase in funding to Echo Health's Peter Daszak, through whom his agency has funded controversial gain-of-function coronavirus research at the Wuhan Lab Institute of Virology in China. Some of these funding amounts have continued through 2021, and one of the newest grants will continue through at least 2025. A significant portion of the funding increased for Daszak, as well as the for Anderson and Gary, was provided through Anthony Fauci's Center for Research in Emerging Infectious Diseases. So, all those people who originally signed that petition in Lancet and New England Journal of Medicine, the AMA, saying it came from nature, from possibly a wet market. No, it did not. And you can bet your life on that. We have absolute irrefutable proof this was genetically engineered. And how else would you get the HIV gene in there, or the prions that could cause mad cow disease? No, there's that proof. But then again, we trust the media, and we don't look behind the scenes, and we should have. That's just today. Just want to share that with you. So their house of cards is crumbling. And we're going to be there at every step of this. All right? So they can continue to attack people. But, hey, remember the doctor who we had on the show who quit her job after being suspended for promoting ivermectin, criticizing mandates? She's now suing the Houston Methodist Hospital for COVID data and financial reports. And good for her, Dr. Mary Bodwin, who was previously suspended and then fired for spreading misinformation. No, she was telling the truth. Misinformation was coming from all the media and all governmental officials. But now there are cracks in that. And by the way, none of her patients died. All of her patients got well. She treated, I believe it was close to 1,000 or more patients, and using a combination of therapies, which included ivermectin. Not allowed to do that, and otherwise they go after you. Well, everyone's fighting back, except Americans have to go to the streets. Now, we're going to play a clip. It's only about 60 seconds long, but this is going, and then I'll explain why this clip is important.
I just want to start by asking the CDC one question. How stupid do you think we are?
She said that your son is mentally retarded and that there's no hope for your son.
I saw my normal, healthy, developing child start to lose all of his language, all of his contact with the world. He no longer responded to his name. He no longer recognized his parents.
Most of the research that's done on vaccines is paid for by people who are either manufacturing or selling vaccines.
Turn around and face the media, please, and I'll join you and show them and show the world the reason we're here today.
The speech teacher said, what happened? What's going on? All of a sudden he was engaging in speech, and literally he took off like a rocket at that point.
I had a child in my office last week, and he was not even sitting up 6 months ago. And he's two, almost 3 years old now, and he was running up and down the halls, talking back to his mother. He was nonverbal, not sitting up. And it was all nutrition.
The psychiatrist called up to say, I don't know what happened to this child, but whatever happened, it was wonderful. I mean, they see the improvement tremendously. In fact, that child was too bad to get into their school originally. I wrote a letter saying, check him again now that we're treating him. They let him in. And now they're putting him in their advanced high school class.
There is hope, and Jonathan has proof, because we are living proof.
Now he's playing t-ball and running around and playing piano and involved in competitive sports.
He came in one day when I was in the kitchen, and he told me he loved me, which, I mean, to have an autistic child who can't talk and then to tell you that they love you, it's just like, oh my gosh, you know, it's like, you know, there are miracles that happen.
We ran into somebody the other day, and I told him that my son's completely recovered from autism. And the response was, that's not possible. So the number one thing that I would like people to know is that recovery from autism is absolutely possible.
Yes, it's completely recoverable because I've done it repeatedly. You heard from, you saw, if you watched that, the one woman who said that her doctor said that it's irreversible. There's nothing they can do to help him. Just give him another anti-anxiety medication. And she said he's already on four. A fifth could kill him. And that's when I got the call. Could I help? A little over a year and a half later, he was normal. And now he is not just normal, he's top of his class, outstanding. And I actually took the Ortegas, all of them, to Washington, D.C., to a group of 7,000 scientists when I was one of the keynote speakers for my work on menopause. But I didn't talk about menopause. I brought all these people who had conditions that were considered medically irreversible, including end-stage cancer, Alzheimer's, and autism, where the people had completely reversed it. They were interested, but no one followed it up, unfortunately. But I'm not the only one. There are other programs out there doing good work. The Dan Group is doing good work, and I filmed them all. So I'm going to show the film about all these people reversing autism, improving their conditions against what any doctor or pediatrician believed was possible. And then here's a question. Why is it not a single medical doctor, not a single pediatrician, not a single person from any government agency is interested in the success of reversing disease without their medications, and they come back to normal? Wouldn't that be something that even the New York Times, even let's say they say, well, that's not possible, and get a whole team of people together saying, that's not possible. Get 1,000 pediatricians. They all think the same, that's easy to do. And let them stand and say, you can't do that. Then we'll march out. Patients, totally cured from autism, with their medical records and all the documentation, including their original diagnosis, the original attending physician, and what protocols they were on. But that won't happen. That's a truth they will not allow out. So you see, I'm suggesting this, where we've waited all this time to talk about the other vaccines that should have been challenged, and we have not. There hadn't been a word. Everybody just so tightly says, I'm pro-vaccine. Well, how much research have you done? If you haven't done any, I could understand why you would be just one-minded and single-minded. But what about the proof It's out there. Are you willing to look at it? We're going to close our program saying goodbye to our BA audience, but we're going to close our program today with something you have not seen. Dr. Malone talking about the childhood vaccine right now for COVID and why you should really think twice, because all of the science is against it. Here's what he has to say.
My name is Robert Malone. I'm a physician and a scientist, but more importantly, I'm a father and a grandfather. I don't usually read from a prepared speech, but this is so important that I wanted to make sure that I got every single word and fact, scientific fact, correct. I stand by this statement with a career dedicated to vaccine research and development. I'm vaccinated for COVID, and I'm generally pro-vaccination. I've devoted my entire career to developing safe and effective ways to prevent and treat infectious diseases. After this, I'll be posting the text of this statement so that you can share it with your friends and family. Here's the thing. Before you inject your child, a decision that is irreversible, I wanted to let you know the scientific facts about this genetic vaccine, which is based on the RNA vaccine technology I created. There are three main issues that parents need to understand before they take this irrevocable decision. The first is that a viral gene will be injected into your parent's cells. This gene forces your child's body to make toxic spike proteins. These proteins often cause permanent damage in children's critical organs. These organs include their brain and nervous system, their heart and blood vessels, including blood clots, their reproductive system, and most importantly, this vaccine can trigger fundamental changes to their immune system. The most alarming point about this is that once these damages have occurred, they are irreparable. They cannot be reversed. You can't fix the lesions within their brains. You cannot repair heart tissue scarring. You cannot repair a genetically reset immune system. And this vaccine can cause reproductive damage that could affect future generations of your family. The second thing you need to know is about the fact that this novel technology has not been adequately tested. We need at least 5 years of testing and research before we can really understand the risks associated with this new technology. The harms and risk from new medicines often become revealed many years later. I ask you to ask yourself, as a fellow parent, if you want your child to be part of the most radical experiment in human history. One final point. The reason they're giving you to vaccinate your child is a lie. Your children represent no danger to their parents or grandparents. It's actually the opposite. Their immunity after getting COVID is critical to save your family, if not the world, from this disease. Finally, in summary, there's no benefit for your children or your family to be vaccinating your children against the small risks of the virus, given the known health risks of the vaccine that, as a parent, you and your children may have to live with for the rest of your lives. The risk-benefit analysis is not even close with this vaccine for children. As a parent and grandparent, my strong recommendation to you is to resist and fight to protect your children.
Dr. Robert Malone. And mind you, he was the developer of the technology that then became the useful tool for making the vaccines. And he is pro-vaccine, not for your children. Think about it. Look at the research. Do your homework. Have a nice day, everyone.